Hello, my name is Joe Hayes. I'm a working class boy whose mother had 8th grade music theory qualifications, yet I never heard her play a note on the piano, not even walk up to a piano and with a finger touch and play one note. So I don't know if it was that or that her mother used to play the fiddle in the dance band in Bernard Heads outside Bundaberg in Queensland. And her sister was a nun and used to lead up the music arm of the convents in Queensland. So I don't know, but music has always been there for me. And mathematics, you know, a lot of people do music. A lot of parents encourage their kids to do music because it's really good for maths. It's that side of the brain. So I got into guitar playing in my teens and was quite good at it. Sort of the natural best in the town. So I pursued it through uni and used to make a bit of a living off guitar playing. And students that I had at uni, so that progressed quite well. And at the end of uni, I had to make a choice between my engineering qualification and music. Really, literally, should I pursue a career as a professional musician or engineering? And, you know, there's a saying that musicians have to pay for the privilege to be a musician. I decided engineering. But I had this love for audio. I also at uni was accepted to do architecture because I was very good at drawing, spatial thinking, and due to a circumstance in the family, you know, being working class, my accommodation fell through. I couldn't take my first choice, which I'd been offered the position as an architect student. So I took engineering because I was interested in audio. And when I did finished my engineering degree, 4 years, and it was graduation time, I was really disappointed. I did my thesis on loudspeaker design because that was audio and music again. And I just didn't want to go work for the big telcos or anything like that. I only did electronic engineering because I was interested in audio. So what does a poor boy do in those circumstances? Well, I enrolled in a master's in acoustics, as you do. They got me back into an architectural school. In the context of this was in Australia through a leader called Gough Whitlam, education was suddenly made, university education was made a free right to the whole population. So suddenly all the working class kids could pursue higher education. So I enrolled in my master's. I had to wait a year for it to turn around, and I bitterly disappointed my mother. She wanted me to go work as an electronic engineer in one of the big telecommunications companies or mining companies or something like that. Anyway, because of the way I'm built, I can be a little bit aspergic towards other people's concerns. And so I waited and pursued my master's in acoustics and did very well at it, you know, and learned about acoustics. And all through this, I pursued music. You know, I helped a friend called Kev Carmody with his first record, Pillars of Society. You know, it's considered one of the best protest albums ever made in Australia. It was done with a $1,500 budget. It just goes to show, as long as you've got attitude, you don't need money. So, music has always been there. But because, you know, of the right to the privilege, musicians have to pay for the privilege to be a musician. You know, a musician is someone who puts a $50,000 PA into a $5,000 van, drives 500 miles to do a gig to get paid $50. So I pursued engineering too. And look, I ended up starting a company called PASAC, which was in the music technology. And we were electronics manufacturing. And through all that, it was serious engineering, and I got some serious skills, particularly in quality assurance. And when I did my master's in acoustics and I learned about acoustics, I realised there was something very wrong with conventional loudspeakers and the whole field, the whole idea that, you know, the way a conventional loudspeaker works is going to do anything but argue with the room in which the music's been played. So, the passion for music. I'm 58. I'm getting into playing guitar again. Because after PASAC, I worked on 1,000 guitars, putting pickups into them, and I just couldn't stand looking at a guitar. It's a bit like that now with loudspeakers. I can't stand looking at little screws that with Phillips screwdriver heads. Because after you worked on 1,000 loudspeakers, you don't want to see, you don't want to work on one ever again. So, but when my daughter was born in 1990, 6 months later, I sat down. We lived on a beautiful lake, and I sat down on the, we had a table down near the lake, and I sat down for a glass of Chardonnay, as you do, and as my buttock hit the seat, as I was bending down to sit down in the motion of sitting down, I remember having this thought that's now called A3D technology, and by the time my buttock had hit the seat, I also had the business strategy of how I'm going to do this project. And that sort of goes back to being working class, particularly in Australia where I did this. There isn't a culture of support that's that great for innovation. There isn't really an understanding that we can innovate and export innovation in the society. And really, as a great leader in our nation, Noel Pearson said, only the bereaved can really appreciate opportunity. It was a speech he gave at the funeral of Gough Whitlam, the leader who gave the free education, I believe. And what that means is that a lot of opportunity in Australia is the reserve of rich kids. And if you take a Pareto look at this, well, 20% of the population are rich, upper middle class, 80% aren't. And opportunities to pursue innovation and be successful are, I feel, people can argue whether it's true or not, but I feel they are only available to the rich kids. And Australia as a nation is firing on one of five pistons, that means. Because the other four pistons, the 80%, are working class. And there isn't really a pathway available to working class people. Because our current culture of innovation is that you need to, at some stage, get capital. And if you need to get capital, you need to go to the capitalist. And the capitalists, by and large, in my experience in Australia, they like to buy companies from the garage sale, that is, as they go under into administration. Or they like to half fund it and ratchet up their equity. They don't get that science and engineering and innovation is just a matter of grinding something down. It's a long-term play in which you just simply grind it down. So all of this, you know, I've thought recently, why am I doing this? Why? And I come back to the fact that as I'm in older life, well, one of the great passions I have is music, playing it, listening to it. Listening to a great performances. The other passion I have is vintage motorbikes and sustainable living, off-grid living, lithium battery power walls, those sorts of things. But, you know, they're to me, anything beyond that, I don't really see why, other than I don't really believe in the consumer society that we consume ourselves to death. Some people get rich because they're either kleptomaniacs or they're good at something. Most people are poor. Mass media feeds the head. To me, it's a whole system I don't understand. Maybe it's because I grew up in the highlands of Papua New Guinea without TV. That part of my childhood was 7 to 14. It had a huge influence on me. And maybe I feel more at home in an Indigenous society than I do in a Western society. I don't know what it is. But nonetheless, during this journey, I picked up a master's degree in acoustics, honours level, and I did an electronic engineering undergraduate. So I understood electronics and audio, and I understood acoustics by the architectural acousticians. And I realised the two weren't agreeing with each other. The two had no idea. Most audio guys think they know acoustics, and most acousticians aren't even interested in listening or thinking about an audio. To them, it's just a signal and a wire. It is. Audio is just a signal in a wire. It's two-dimensional. It's amplitude and time. Room acoustics is four-dimensional. It's three dimensions and time. A whole different beast. So, on the question of what is it I want to accomplish, I don't know. I think a lot of things I do is for political reason. I feel that I'm quite political, and I feel if you're going to be political, you need to have capital. It's that capital thing again. And a working class kid doesn't have capital, so they need to create an innovative company, create some capital from which you can then be political. I guess that's the way I saw it. What are the external struggles or challenges I am dealing with? Enormous list. I don't know if we have enough time to get through them. Because along the way I became a QA expert, a QA consultant. I'm pretty good at that stuff. And from my first high-tech company, PASAC, it crashed and burned. And when I finally realized, after being taught quality assurance for 2 years by a gentleman, I looked at my own startup and I realized this has got one destination to crash and burn. So I just walked out the door, knowing fully well that the company would crash and burn. And it did. But that was at the same time as I understood quality assurance, and I understood how you use quality assurance and process to get to guarantee your assured quality. You will assure that you get to your destination if you use QA. Most people don't get that. But anyway, I followed process, and I realized that I had to, if you like, take time out of the equation by microfinancing it. If I'd been to grab venture capital or a large amount of money, they would own a big part of the company. They would have the power to make decisions. They would have given up a long, long time ago because they wouldn't understand the process of grinding down. They wouldn't have time for it. They want a return on investment much quicker than grinding down may take. So I decided, okay, I'm going to grind this thing down at the rate at which I'm allowed to do it through support by microfinancing or other factors like supporting, you know, having a family and a daughter, supporting them. I remember I felt like I had three jobs, the day job that got income, the innovation job at night, and then, you know, sort of on the management side, dealing with all this balance and conflict and finding, navigating a way through. The struggle I have, like we're here at a mature age, we've ground it down, we know what our technology, Acoustic 3D does, or A3D. It's amazing, it's chaos theory, and the chaotic measurements we're getting are exactly how they should be, chaotic. We understand it all, and now's the time to go to the world with this incredible technology that's incredibly cheap to implement and radicalise a whole field of science. Now, that doesn't mean my shareholders are up to speed on this. They don't get the details, they don't understand the QA processes, they don't necessarily understand the advantage we have at the moment. So bringing the shareholders up to speed, getting on with selling our first production run. We have 700 of these units left that were frozen in production because things weren't right. We know how to make them correct now and get on with selling that and getting on with now finally going to revenue. And in Australia, they like to see technologies that are post-revenue, which is like this is how Australian corporations and investors steal defeat from the jaws of victory. They say companies must be post-revenue before you invest in them. It's a bit like the chicken and the egg. You know, do you invest in a company so it gets in a position to sell something and create revenue? Like us, yeah, there's been investment. And because I'm a QA prick, if you like, I've held everything up till we get everything exactly right because then we can sprint really quick. And that costs money. The whole thing's up to get everything right. So did I put too hard a rule on that? No. You have to get everything right. If startups out there, you need to find someone who will fund you and is patient enough and is smart enough to fund you till you get everything absolutely right. They're the external struggles and challenges, but I've got some great shareholders. And fortunately, one shareholder in particular who's been very helpful, money is not his god. Money is a tool that allows things to happen. If you look at people like Elon Musk, Steve Jobs or whatever, you know, they're worth beans and beans and beans. So what? Or Jack Ma put it really well. You know, money is a tool. And people in Australia have got money. They should enable innovators to get out there and create an innovative industry by, for fuck's sake, just giving them the money. Who cares what equity you got? Who cares? It's just a tool. And with the challenges facing our society at the moment, like climate change, you know, we don't need old school idiot thinking. You know, we neither should we take governance out of it. But you can be a modern, innovative, incredible technological company run by governance. Huge fan of governance. So, you know, there is some value in the conservative view of things, but again, one of the struggles I deal with is people's conservatism. I'm in unique. I can see where we are, what the obstacles are, that they've been removed, and what the potential upside is going to be. What internal conflicts am I dealing with as a result of this goal you're going through? Enormous internal conflicts. You know, I've almost bankrupted myself. I'm having to make some decisions right now, which are incredibly risky. That's because I'm not getting any support from the shareholders, really. I'm owed a huge amount of back wages that if I had them, I could pay my tax bill. I don't have the back wages, so I can't pay my tax bill. So there is a reality that I could go into bankruptcy, whereas the company could go sales off into the future and has a fantastic, prosperous future. I don't think that's fair. So we'll see what happens there. But I'm focused on getting us across the line where the value is realised and the value is put on my effort I've put into this. So why do I put so much effort into something like this? Well, I guess it's the right thing to do. You know, I'm really bored by the idea of be born, be silent, consume and die. I find that absolutely void of anything interesting for me. So I don't know if that's a fault I have or a gene I have. Who knows? So on the question of what was the wall, frustration or problem you hit within your current opportunity that you have been using to try to establish your desires that started this new journey you are on now? I'm trying something new, to try something new. Really make time to describe what you really felt, whether it was frustration, fear, hopelessness, just to be real or with your listeners. So look, on that, I guess it was the failure of PASAC. I was 28. Human resources is a good time for people to walk when they're 28 to 33, something different. I had 5% of the company I'd founded. I was on 40 grand a year wages, and I had the CFO of a huge public company come in and take over. And look, he can play Rachmaninoff on the piano, but he crawled my whole fucking supply chain I'd built in the USA, one of which includes Larry Fishman, who's now turning over $25 million US a year, I hear. You know, so all the people I'd partnered and built relationships, they just came in and smashed all that. And it was just like these arrogant rich kids, basically, who just come in with their sense of opportunity. Only the bereaved can really appreciate opportunity. They just piss on opportunity. I feel that it's just their right to take opportunity. And it was horrible to see these people come into the company. And so I was out of that, you know, out of the anger of that, I did Pillars of Society with Kev Carmody. We were both very angry people at the time, and that's where that album came from. The song Pillars of Society is, I believe, based on these people that had come in and invested in my high-tech firm and their whole attitude. So listen to the song if you're interested in how we felt. I knew what not to do. Because of that, I knew exactly what not to do, which was to take venture capital and et cetera, et cetera. And I knew marketing knew that there was plenty of time to wait. You know, Rice and Kellogg loudspeaker was designed in 1921. The world could wait 10, 20, 30 years. It didn't really matter. It was just about being smart, laying low, and buying your time and grinding it down. Carbonara, right? Grind it down. Bastardo carbonara. And I must admit, of recent, when we finally got the understanding in chaos, why we're getting chaotic measurements and why they are, and we have a complete understanding, the elation is phenomenal. And I guess an old girlfriend said to me once that, unfortunately, you know, pointed out that I'm addicted to challenges. And I guess if you look at Elon Musk, right, he's addicted to challenges, like he takes on half a dozen different world-breaking challenges. So that's our flaw. We're addicted to challenges. But the A3D challenge is over, other than the commercialization side. But boy, was it a challenge. So my plan was to, because I had all the skills, you know, how did I plan to achieve my desire? Because I'd actually accrued the skills, and experience is what you call your mistakes, right? So if you don't know how something, go out there and do something and learn. You may fail, but you learn. And if you fail enough times, you'll finally get such a big arsenal, a big enough arsenal of knowing what not to do, that you'll become quite formidable. There are those out there who'll go out and fail and won't learn anything. Well, I'm sorry, I can't help those people. They're just idiots. But if you're smart, do stuff and learn, you know. So what was the point of no return? Well, I guess, you know, of late I've really wanted to give up. It's just been so many years, 28 years. But when I look at it logically, it goes, no, Joe, you're crazy to give up. And that's the thing that kept me going. You're crazy to give up because logically this is all good. And, you know, I've put so much of the family resources into this that my daughter now thinks she has to work and earn a lot of income to make up for that loss. That motivates me to see her, to get to a point where she understands, I did know what I was doing and that she doesn't have to earn a lot of money. Don't worry about that. It's sort of a false god anyway, in my view, but that motivates me a lot. And it's like if you practice for the Olympics, what's the point of doing 10 years of practice if you're not prepared to compete in the final? That's the sports athletics view of all this. You know, when you're so tired of pursuing this, you have no resources and the shoulders don't get it. They don't understand QA, so don't even bother explaining it to them, all the process. You work as an island, but then finally when you get there, everyone sees why. Well, I hope they do. So I persisted because I'd sunk so much into this. Probably to be perfectly honest, I'd persisted because I'd sunk so much money and time and resources into this. And so had the shareholders. That it didn't make sense to give up. And, you know, the real finalization of the realization of how the technology worked happened when one of the shareholders did something incredibly kind to me. And I felt such a sense of elation, and within 3 days that solved the whole lot. So shareholders out there, do random acts of kindness. You know, they go a long way. If you're funding a founder, do a random act of kindness. You know, think about the founder. The founder has to understand the issue and get across the line. You don't need all the hangers-on. You just need to look after the founder. Sure, founders may be negligent skill sets, but so support those skill sets. But that's what helped for me. So the results we have, and particularly of late, we're looking at our patent attorney passed away in May, and he was great. And he suggested a firm that we go to on his deathbed, and he was a bit reluctant. And we went to that firm, and a month ago I had $29,000 in invoices from this firm. I didn't really know what they were for. I now know that, you know, for a $300 patent renewal fee on the Australian Patent Office, which you can go into the portal and pay online in about 3 minutes, they were charging $982 for. So they were charging $682 to go online and pay a $300 fee. That's Australia. That's not right. That's broken. So anyway, we got rid of that firm and through that kind shareholder found a company, a small company that caps their fee at $225. So that would be a $525 fee instead of a $980 fee. It halves our patent bills. You know what? I got online, paid $300 and told the guy and he was happy. But he'll look after our patents moving forward. So we got rid of that patent firm. And we're looking at the 8th year renewal fees, which between that patent and the new patents on our manifolds forms a pretty impenetrable shield. And the whole idea of having to give up some what we'd work and sunk $200,000 into for patents, had to give up the protection because no one really understood where we are, what the problems were. And I didn't know a month ago that we're about to solve them in the next week. But that's the spirituality of this stuff, is not to give up. And I kept going because people, I kept in my head was going, the smart advice is to not give up. As much as I wanted to give up, all the advice was do not give up. So I kept putting one foot ahead of the other. It was pretty hard to do, just little steps, but boom, suddenly it all happened. And I do feel a sense that it's not until you're really ready, the sort of spirituality or whatever this is not until you're really ready for a phase that you go through that it all comes together. It seems like when it all comes together, it's just on the cusp of when you get certain things right. And if things aren't coming together, it's sort of like the universe is telling you, you haven't got everything right yet. I really have noticed that I've also noticed, whether I've got a clairvoyancy, I notice that an acausal world, I can see little signs of things happening before they happen. And I've noticed this for the last 10 years, and they're always dead on. An acausal is where the future, present and past exist all at the same time. You're only aware of the present. But if you live, clear your head out enough, you can start seeing clairvoyancy or signs or indicators of what's about to happen. I won't go into acausality too much here. I have found through this process that I'm actually 26 weeks into a level one Iyengar yoga course, and that I'm rebuilding myself at the moment. It's clearing out my head, it's clearing out my physique. It's fantastic, but it's also on the top of what I've achieved with this innovation. I do want to change the world. I guess I do, even as one loudspeaker at a time, I do want to change the world. God knows the incumbents who run the world at the moment are doing that great a job. So it's absolutely worth others coming in and having a go. And the belief system I've adopted in all this is that, you know, it's the Zen Buddhist thing, if you like. All of us have a role of what we do on the planet. I know what I'm doing is my role, because, you know, I went to counselling when I was 35 with my partner at the time, marriage counselling, and they were great counsellors, and they said, keep doing it, Joe, don't stop. My partner wanted me to stop, but they said, whatever you do, don't stop. It's what you're meant, it's what you're on this planet to do. And I have pursued that. I hope my daughter and ex-partner understand that. It's what I'm on the planet for. And it's not that I'm greedy or selfish. I don't see it as greed or self. It's just self-realization, if you like, but it's just me. It's just me and what I'm here and what I'm born to do. So look forward to my next podcast. Thank you.